It all starts with an invitation to experience Lexus. To start the ignition. To feel confident. To be connected to everything. It starts as an invitation to drive a Lexus vehicle. But it becomes a dynamic experience. The Invitation to Lexus sales event. Your invitation is always open. But the offers only last through March 31st. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. Click the banner to discover more.
UFC 259. Wow, what an event. Let's hit that intro.
It's time!
So, Jesus Christ, after last week's turd in the punch bowl event where every fight on the card was a grand to watch, an absolute grand to watch. UFC 259 definitely delivered. I am Mags, and with me, as always, my son Carlos. Carlos, how are you?
I am good. How are you, my friend? And how are you, the fans?
Yeah, first time we're going live already, having some issues. People not remembering to turn their phones down, like the idiots that we are. But quickly, let's run over these many, many prelims. Started the card with Trevin Jones picking up a KO in the first round in the bantamweight division against Mauro Bautista. Continuing the first round KOs in the lightweight division with Uros Medic picking up the win over Alon Cruz. Third first-round KO of the night, Amanda Lemos beating Livia Renato Souza in the women's strawweight. Submission for Sean Brady in the third round against Jake Matthews in the welterweight division. Kennedy and Zichukwu continuing with great form with a second-round KO over Carlos Ulberg. And the last of the early prelims, Tim Elliott, getting the decision against Jordan Espinoza. We have four recorded prelims on the card. Started with Cara France picking up a KO at the end of the first round against Rogerio Bontorin. And then Askarov picking up a really good victory against Joseph Benavidez with his third round decision. Another decision with Carla Phillips picking up the decision against Sonia Dong. And we finished the card, well, the prelims at least, on a decision, not boarding well for the main card, with Dominic Cruz picking up the victory against Casey Kenny.
But that fight, though, that the feature prelim against Dominic Cruz and Casey Kenny, that were a slugfest from start to finish. Mm-hmm. And Dominic Cruz could be happy with himself. He hasn't won a fight since 2016, and comes in tonight, absolutely puts on a performance and gets the decision win. He must be happy with that. And if you want to check out my reactions, go and check out our Instagram and find out my reactions to the prelims.
Yeah, it was a great victory. And we've got a message from Tanner, amazing friend of the show and my Radio Techers tag team partner. Welcoming us and saying, how are we this evening / morning? Yeah, it is morning. It's 6:35 in the a.m. Yeah, we're doing good, Tanner. Thanks for your support. We always appreciate it, sir.
We do indeed. Thank you, Tanner. How are you, my good man?
So let's go into the first fight on this main card. Thiago Santos taking on Alexander Rakic. And I don't really want to spend a lot of time on this fight, to be honest, because watching this fight made me feel that we were getting a repeat of last week. This should have set the benchmark for what this card should have turned out to be. And two exciting fighters, two killers, two people who have been on tears. Obviously, Santos has been out since the Bones fight and really kind of struggled with his knees now being made of Weetabix and being held together, together by Hopes. But, yeah, we just didn't get that kind of exciting, dynamic fight that we should have got. For me, I give Rakic all three rounds. I felt that Santos in the first round was incredibly nervous. I mean, both really were kind of testy in the first round, but I felt that Rakic controlled the centre of the octagon a little bit more, was able to land more of those leg kicks, and Santos really felt them. I don't think he's anywhere near recovered from those and the injuries, and I don't think he's got long in his career before his knees really start to pack in. Going into the second round, I felt that maybe this was arguably Santos's best round. Landed a couple more shots than he did in the first, but again, Rakic did for me just enough to kind of take the points. Really, kind of a point scoring fight, to be fair, with the range of Rakic just keeping Santos a bit. And then in the third, a lot of the same. Rakic started to eat more leg kicks, which was a bad thing, obviously. But I think for me, he felt like he'd done enough in the first two rounds that he could maybe take a breather in that third round and absorb that damage. And as long as he didn't get finished, he was going to take the fight. And that's exactly what happened. In fact, I think one judge actually gave all three rounds to Rakic, which is totally understandable. But a unanimous victory for him there.
Yeah, congratulations for the win. It was a good win for him. I think he's another one who was coming off a loss, so a good win over a big name in that division. I do agree with you, Thiago Santos's knees do seem to still be a problem to him. Whether that be he hasn't recovered or he's just a bit nervous to get him re-injured again, might see a sports psychiatrist about that, but we'll never know bar from if he openly comes out and tells himself. But yeah, Rakitic were able to put on a performance and control most of the octagon. But it were a boring fight, but you know, it weren't a boring fight. My fight, man, I won this. That's what weren't a boring
wow,
fight.
Wow, first time on live stream and he's already trying to flex. What a baby back bitch. Got a comment here from Josh, Josh Robinson 00. Go and give him a follow on Twitter. He's now got a underscore between the Robinson and the zero because he gets himself banned for playing R. Carlin music. But yeah, I know nothing about what's going on here, but I'll give this a like and give you an extra viewer. Well, technically two extra viewers because Giddy Robinson is probably the best thing that happens in Josh's life. But let's go to the second fight. Lightweight fight, Islam Makhachev, kind of the person taking over from the mantle of Habib from those Dagestani wrestling warriors. And he was taking on Drew Dober, someone who doesn't always get the due that they deserve. I think on the feet, he's one of the better fighters in that division, maybe even in the company. But he got embarrassed today on the ground. Makhachev was very, very controlling. First round, I thought Dober did quite well. He used his pace and his quickness. But once Makhachev wants to take you down, you have no option. And he's within a minute of the fight, he had the trip. He had Dober on the floor. He was just controlling, switching positions. Dober really kind of needs to, if he wants to push for top 10, he needs to up that ground game very, very quickly, because Makhachev, what is he? Was he ranked 14th? He's really kind of struggled to get anybody to take him on. He's like, people are actively avoiding this guy as a fighter. Gets to the end of the first round, almost gets an armbar. Starting the second, and Dober knew he had a fight on his hands and had to come out and kind of take the impetus in the fight to really go for broke. Gets took down again straight away almost, and we spend another 4 or so minutes on the floor with Makhachev just smothering Dober, able to just control him at will. This was the kind of fight where if Makhachev wanted to, he could have just pulled Dober's pants down and spanked his arse. He just had him every which way he wanted. Again, we are going to the third round within 30 seconds. Guess what happened? We got an inside trip and Dober's on the floor. But this time he gets trapped in an arm triangle and very quickly knows the game is up. I mean, the guy was on it was on for a unanimous loss anyway, so there was no point kind of taking that extra damage. You know when you beat, learn a lesson from it, and Makachev pressing for a top five. I mean, he desperately should be getting a top five fighter now, Carlos.
I definitely do think you're right about that. He's after the performance he put on Drew Dober, going into that first round when he had that armbar. Fair, you've got to look at the armbar, and especially when your opponent's elbow is in like the crotch area in a way. Mm-hmm. You sometimes I got it. Unless you've got that pressure and that torque to actually do damage and snap their arm, it takes a lot of pressure to pull that off and do it. We saw it only a couple of times. People remember it with Frank Mir and Tim Sylvia, but other than that, it's not really a common thing you see every day with someone doing that. So when the elbow is in that place, it's generally a loss. You might as well let it go, because you're not going to get it off. But Chimaev could have reversed it into a bit of a leg lock, but he didn't decide to fully commit to it. Ended up standing it back on the feet. But coming from the background he's from, obviously from an Eagles fighter, one of Khabib's father's first students, mm-hmm. now transitioning over to AKA, still with Khabib, is, I'm guessing, I'm going to say his head coach now, with him semi-retired.
He was in the corner as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was giving more instruction. He was giving more instruction than like a supportive fighter in a way. He was acting as the head coach in a way, and even mm-hmm. though they had a head coach, which is not a bad thing. We could be looking at the next big Dagestani champion, which again is a high possibility for Makachev. He's getting up there, and he's getting up there fast, especially after the victory and the performance he put on. How can you deny him? If I say top five, I feel like we just, every time we say that the UFC push a fighter too much, fair enough, he's got seven fights in a row. But when you look at it like that, he's still learning in a way. I think Max Holloway got, 11 fights in a row, 9 fights in a row before he got his title shot. Let him get experience first. So I'm not saying don't give him someone out in the top 10. Definitely, I think he does deserve it after the performance. But like I said, if I say top five, I feel like we're going to be pushing him quicker than what he should be. Even though it's a possibility that he could get to that position faster than most fighters, it's always better to learn rather than jump ahead. Better to walk before you can run.
Yeah, I mean, I would not be unhappy with maybe like Paul Felder against Makachev or Dan Hooker against Makachev.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind any of them fights. I think that's a brilliant pick for him. He's in that division. He did call out Tony Ferguson, and if anything, that fight does make the sense for him. Obviously, mm-hmm. the fight's not there with him and Khabib anymore, but it's already a selling point for the UFC and for him. He's playing it smart and he's playing it clever by calling Tony Ferguson out. Yeah. They know that they've already got history between Tony Ferguson and Khabib, and like I say, there's already a bit of a selling point there. Might not be Khabib, but could be the next generation if they want to sell it as that sort of selling point.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get on to the first of three title matches. Petr Yan and Aljamain Sterling for the bantamweight title. And all three fights, I mean, I picked all three winners, but they all were so different. And this one, I think, is probably the most controversial, would you say? Aljamain Sterling left the building as champion, but he certainly does not feel like a champion to a lot of fans. He certainly does not feel like a champion to himself, but rules is rules, and by rights, he's won the title. So in the first round, it was very kind of, this was probably for me the most razor thin round. A very brave game by Sterling to stand and bang with someone with the power of Petr Yan. He started off really pressuring Yan very, very early, keeping Yan on his back foot. But when Yan opened up and just landed one shot, you could see that it was always going to be trouble for Aljamain Sterling. Now, what surprised me was Aljamain didn't go to his best game plan, which is getting Jan on the off his feet and onto the floor, where Sterling would have way more of an advantage. He was more than willing to try and stand and bang with Jan, which I thought was a ridiculous kind of thing to do, knowing that Jan is arguably the best boxer in the sport. He's just so brutal. There was a point in the first round where Sterling threw a kick and that gets caught, and Jan is the one who ends up trying to take it to the ground. But when it came to actually grappling on the floor, Jan was not interested at all. He gave Sterling multiple times to get up all the way through the four rounds that we got. For me, I just felt that Sterling's game plan was not on point at all. For every time he had some sort of offense, Jan only needed to land one punch and it scared Sterling to death. But we get to the fourth round, and for me, I was thinking, Aljamain needs a finish, because Jan is three up for me. He's absolutely just getting demolished. I mean, you could argue that maybe the first round was razor thin, but certainly for me, the second and third round, Jan was opening up when he had the opportunities on Sterling. And then the fourth round, it felt like that Jan was going for the finish, going for the kill. Gets Sterling onto one knee, and then whilst the referee said, "Do not throw the knee. He's a downed opponent." Jan lands a knee, and it almost looks like, for wrestling fans out there, a kamigoye or a V trigger, and you just see Aljamain's neck just snap back, just laid absolutely out. He was away with the fairies. He just could not. He could not basically get to his feet. He could not. He couldn't stand up. It just didn't make sense. He felt like he wanted to carry on fighting, but if he was allowed to fight, Jan would have only needed to land one punch, and you're talking hospital treatment. The ref and the doctors were struggled to come to some sort of decision. I felt that they took way too long to make that decision. But when Mark Smith confirmed to the doctor that it was an illegal knee and it was intentional, we had no other decision than to disqualify Petr Jan and award the title to Aljamain Sterling. It's upset a lot of people on Twitter. It's upset a lot of MMA fans. It's upset Petr Jan and Aljamain Sterling, because both guys didn't really want the fight to end like this, but hashtag and new.
Definitely, and it's definitely over 1 minute on YouTube, so I'm allowed to swear, and I've been gagging. Aljamain Sterling looked pissed. I don't know what he was doing. His takedowns, in a way, he's fair enough. I can always look at the stars a bit sloppy, but if you're going in there against Petr Jan, his boxing is unreal, and he just looked pissed. And not to take anything away from him, he tried his best. He pushed the pace in that first, second, and third round, and he just gassed himself out. He had nothing left, and to be honest with you, the best thing could happen is this disqualification, because he was losing that fight, and I don't think after that third round he could have even pulled it back, because he couldn't take Petr Jan down, he couldn't hit him cleanly to where he was hurting him, and even when he was hitting him, he was hitting him with like four or five shots. Jan was just covering up, blocking and countering and firing offense whenever he could.
And for me, the most frustrating thing is when he was landing those combinations, and then Petr was coming back at him, Sterling was spinning and was giving his back up all the time and allowing Petr to just like control Aljamain. I've never seen Aljamain fight like that in the last 5 years.
Mm. Well, that's it. But the way he was spinning like that, I could, in a way, a little bit see it as like trying to entice him in, like, yeah, he was having the risk of taking them like hooks coming like from the back, but then in a way, if Jan tried to like grab him, I'm guessing Sterling would just try and roll for the knee. which, you know, obviously he wants to take it to the ground. He wanted to entice him on the ground from the start. And Petty, like you say, he just didn't want none of it. And to be fair to him, why wouldn't you? The guy from Renzo Gracie, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu school, not only that, he's a black belt under Matt Serra. So you're not gonna fuck with him on the ground. It's as simple as that. And Petty, he knew this. As much as he is the champion and he's well-rounded, Sterling is the better fighter when it comes to the ground game. He needed to keep that on the feet, and keep that on the feet he did. He absolutely put a beating on Aljamain. And like I said, the best thing that could have happened was this disqualification. And to be honest with you, I don't think a lot of people are going to say it because it's going to be like, oh, yeah, Tim and stuff like that. Fair enough. I'll give it probably Petr Yan. He don't speak English, does the guy? So I'm guessing he don't really understand it that much. Or even if the referee is saying it's a downed opponent, don't throw the knee. You don't speak or understand English, you're not going to fucking understand the referee, especially when you're fighting and you're in a championship fight of all that adrenaline.
I mean, I understand that, but it's not like it's his first time at the dance. This is a guy who's fought, 17 fights, MMA total, 8 fights in the UFC. He knows the rules. He saw that Aljamain's knee. I mean, it's not like it was just up against the cage and fighters dropping their hands on purpose to know Yan was, Aljamain was on one knee, like he was proposing to Petr, and then he just lands that brutal knee clean to the face, though. And yeah, I like Petr Yan. I think he's been a breath of fresh air in that division, but Jesus Christ, you can't do that.
You can't do that. I weren't denying that for a second. When he's through the knee, the referee's told him no, he's probably not been able to understand it. But like you say, it was blatant that how the knee was placed and how he was sort of looking over Aljamain, he would have been able to see the knee being down. And not only that, it was pushing Aljamain down. And a lot of fighters, when you're doing like push and pull resistance training and all that sort of stuff, you'd sort of know if you feel how much. Yeah, he's not going to be that strong, is he? But when a knee's on the ground, you're trying to push down and pushing into the canvas, you'd feel that. So yeah, I don't know what the fuck you were thinking. I don't know why he's tried to throw that, but he's made a stupid mistake, one of the stupidest mistakes I've ever saw in a championship fight, and it's cost him the belt. They're definitely going to run it back.
It's the first time that it's ever happened that a UFC title has changed hands on disqualification.
That's it. They're definitely going to run it back. They have to run it back from what's happened. Petr Yan, he was beating Aljamain Sterling from start to finish until he did the stupid knee, which I don't understand what he was thinking. He was winning the fight. He only had to either play it smart or get a finish. And to be honest with you, he didn't play it smart and he got a finish. So he don't know what the fuck you were thinking. But yeah, Sterling's the new champ. But you've got to look at it like this. Sterling, replaying on that a bit, because if I was in his position, I'm not taking anything away from it. If I was in his position, I would get my arse up for 3 rounds straight and I need a finish and I was gassed as him. I'd do the fuck you say. I'd do Ric Flair. I'd be like, fucking this old fuck. I'd play it to the extent, but not his decision. The referee and the doctor stopped it, but we have got a new champion and well done him, but they do have to run it back. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I agree. Just go through a couple of these comments from Tanner. He says it was a competitive fight until the end. I respectfully disagree. I thought Petr Yan was clearly winning the fight. But I do agree with his next comment about the knee was brutal, and it's what wrestling fans wish the Kenny Omega's V trigger was. Yeah, totally agree. Let's talk about this co-main event, the return of the Lion, Amanda Nunes taking on Megan Anderson. I don't know if you saw, Carlos, that when Megan arrived at the arena, she looked like death warmed up. She looked ill. She looked pale. She looked like she was going to her own funeral.
She's always looked pale to me.
But, I mean, for someone who should have been arguably Amanda Nunes' biggest challenge in this division, a natural featherweight, 6 foot, really well-toned, really muscled, got lots of power, Amanda Nunes made her look ordinary. Now, is that's because that's not a spat on Megan Anderson. She is still an elite level fighter. It's just that Amanda Nunes is head and shoulders above absolutely everyone, potentially even the men. I think she's in the argument for pound for pound best fighter in the world today. This is a woman who hasn't fought in a year, who refused to fight because of COVID and because she's they've just had a little baby, her and Nina, who's an absolute cute little bundle of joy. But she took 2 minutes to destroy Megan Anderson. From the first shot she landed, that big overhand right, she absolutely stunned Anderson, was able to pick off the shots, followed him up with leg kicks. Anderson, being the bigger opponent, did the sensible thing and went to shoot, and Nunes just powered her off and just threw her onto the floor. Went for the strikes, got the back. Anderson tried to protect the neck, but Nunes is just, there's nowhere in that octagon where she is not dominant. On the feet, she's solid. On the ground, she's scary. She was able to just transition from going for the neck into the arm. Went for an inverted triangle, decided, no, I want the arm, got the arm, tucked it in the armpit, and Megan Anderson had to tap. A year away, 2 minutes later, and still.
Yeah, this is my biggest upset of the night. Megan, I'm fucking backing you today. I want to do so. It's not that I don't like Amanda, it's just that I don't like the idea of this double champ status bullshit. If you're a champion, stick to your weight, defend your belt. If you want to go up, that's fine. If you're the champion, vacate one of the belts. Don't hold it up for the rest of the division. It just gets boring. When you're a proper fan who not only likes to watch the sport, but UFC in general, you want to watch the divisions move on. There's new talent, and especially when me, myself, doing the interviews and interviewing new fighters, when you've got one champion, you've only got that one name. It's that boxing. You've only got these general big names, but yet you've got thousands of boxers out there you don't know. It's the same in mixed martial arts, but they need help to get up there. And when you try and turn it into a sport like boxing, the money's not even there yet. So what's the point in trying to turn it into a sport like boxing? The champions don't even get as much as what boxing fighters get, let alone boxing champions. So fuck turning it into that. Stick to your weight divisions, defend your belt. But in a way, she's the goat. Who's going to challenge her? Who's actually going to be able to, in the 145 and the 135, who's going to be able to prove her wrong? Who's going to be able to try and take them belts off her? Because I don't think anybody can take them belts off her unless they put Cyborg and Ronda Rousey against her at the same time.
Yeah, looking up the rankings for featherweight, and it's not a division, especially in the UFC. They have Felicia Spencer, who was already basically destroyed by Amanda Nunes, then Megan Anderson, who just couldn't get out of the first round. Outside of that, there's nobody in the UFC that is anywhere close to getting a title shot. I mean, Bellator have more people ranked in the division, but even those, the majority of Amanda Nunes is absolutely destroyed in the first place. I mean, this is a woman who's destroyed UFC fighters, Strikeforce fighters, Invicta fighters, WWE fighters, NXT fighters. She's beat everybody. This division only survives in the UFC because of Amanda Nunes. And to be fair, if I was her and I was a double champion and the only fighter in UFC to be able to defend both belts multiple times, I'd want to stick around and be the champion. She's creating a massive legacy that nobody's ever going to beat.
Not only that, she's getting the money, but I do agree with Thomas comment. Ring on Valentina.
Yeah, absolutely. But Valentina is not going to go up weight. So that would mean Amanda Nunes dropping weight to become a triple champion.
Yeah, that would never happen, I don't think. The reason she went up is because she cut weight already in a way to 135. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't think she'd be able to cut down to Valentina's weight. But no, yeah,
I believe not. I mean, the only kind of fight on the horizon that I can see that has got any kind of potential is if they bring in Kayla Harrison from PFL. I think she's currently like 8-0, but
I think she likes them competitions and them tournaments at PFL. The PFL, when they get £1 million for winning them $1 million for winning them tournaments at the end of it, I mean, she will know that two of them, something like that. So yeah, I don't think she wants to come away from that promotion anytime soon, especially when you know.
I mean, it's the only, for me though, it's the only fight that actually makes sense, because the other two in the top five are Cyborg and Julia Budd, both on long-term Bellator contracts, and then you've got Felicia Spencer, who Amanda Nunes absolutely schooled. So we'll see what's coming, but as of right now, Amanda Nunes may be the best fighter in the world.
She's definitely the best woman's fighter. If you don't agree with me, you're wrong.
Then Tanner's comments are about bring on Valentina and have the fight at £135. I would love to see that fight. I just do not think that Valentina dares come up to 135, because I think she'd get destroyed by Nunes at that weight again.
Yeah.
So let's go on to the main event. Another one that I predicted, and a lot of fans were basically praising and bowing to the feet of Israel Adesanya, but yeah, he just couldn't get the job done against Jan Błachowicz. And you know, props to his. It takes a very, very brave man to step up 20 pounds to face someone who hits like Jan Błachowicz. And especially to weigh in at 5 pounds under the limit, knowing that Jan is probably going to weigh on fight night possibly 230. So he's got such a big kind of gap.
Even eating pizza and steak.
Well, they do, don't they? They put on, what, 15, 20 pounds of weight like from weigh-ins to fight night. So, yeah, I would have easily expected him to weigh that much. But Izzy wanted the legacy fight and absolutely got the legacy fight, and it kind of did backfire on him. For me, I felt that he probably took the first couple of rounds. Jan looked very, very nervous, and Izzy looked all business. Normally you get the Izzy that's kind of like dancing and messing around in the octagon, but he was there to prove a point. And for the first two rounds, he was certainly proving it for me. He was the quicker fighter, landing shots. I don't think his shots had quite the kind of the sting of Jan Błachowicz's shots, but he certainly was able to land a lot more. Jan just didn't look comfortable in getting inside Adesanya's range. When he did try and grapple against the cage, it was interesting to see. Israel kind of out-muscled Jan a couple of times, being able to kind of like force his way off the cage with spins and landing shots on the way out. Jan near the end of the second round went for a flying knee, which both of the fighters ended up having a good giggle about, because it didn't work. That's not
very, very close.
Yeah, that's not Jan's wheelhouse, and you could tell. Where Jan started to really like pick up for me was landing more leg kicks. It was when we get to the third to fourth to fifth round, you could see that Izzy was more planted with the legs, because Jan had stung them legs, and he was able to land a few more shots in that third round, which I think is the pivotal round for me, because that was the one that he eked out, the one that was the most razor thin, especially on the judges' scorecards, for him to win. And then you would go to the fourth and the fifth, and he played a perfect game plan. He took some punishment, but was able to get the takedowns, which were massive, massive point scorers for him, controlling Izzy on the ground for over half the round in the fourth, and again in the third. I think it was dead on 2.5 minutes in the third when in the fifth when he got the takedown. And that's what swayed the judges, the power that able to keep Izzy on the floor and land shots, not so much hurting shots, but point scoring shots quite again. And he was able to get the victory. Very nervy first defense for your title. A little bit concerning that someone has come up from a weight 20 pounds down, but the truth is Jan comes away with the victory. Israel, the bottom's fast, not on the cards now, is it? Not that it ever really was, but yeah, Israel goes back down to middleweight, solidifies himself as the best in that division, and Jan moves on to bigger and better and hopefully better performances than this.
Yeah, well, that's it. I don't think he put on a bad performance, Jan. He definitely deserved taking the belt away. It was a very close first, second, and third round, and then you've got the third, the fourth, and fifth, which he did the perfect thing. He were able to take Israel Adesanya down and keep him down, which not a lot of people have. And I was speaking to a lot of different fighters, and a lot of them said the same thing. Can he take Israel Adesanya down? And personally, I did believe that he could take him down and actually keep him down there. And it weren't just generally the power in there. It was also the technique. You were able to use Izzy's sort of defensive leaning backwards to able to take him down. Because you were always making him throwing that one, making him lean back and then level change and shooting in. But then, obviously, like you say, when Izzy were up against the cage, I will give it to him. His wrestling takedown defense is up there, even though his jiu-jitsu's dog shit. Even though that's because he were in some positions where I don't know how he didn't know what to do, or because he was lying in half guard. Now I can understand it's a hard position when you're in, especially when someone's heavier than you to get out of. You've got to use technique in that position. He was trying to use brute force and roll into him, and it's like the guy already weighs like 15, 20 pounds more than you. That's not gonna fucking, it's not gonna happen. You're in fourth round, you fuck yourself. That's not gonna happen. You're not gonna be able to overpower him. You've got to use technique in that position, and he clearly didn't have the technique again, so it's jiu-jitsu's dog shit. But in respect to him, he went up there, challenged Jan. I'm glad he sort of lost, because again, I don't like the fact that the double champ stuff, I'm getting bored of it. Jan put on a performance. I thought to myself, coming into the fight, the only way Izzy could win is the way he were doing it. Try and get the pace to start out fast and make Jan a bit tired. Now,
it worked, because in that fifth round he was tired.
But I believe he were only tired because of how much grappling he did in that fourth round. And fair enough, he was tired, and Israel did make him tired, but his fatigueness came out more when he started grappling himself and grappling Israel, and I think that's what made him more tired in the fifth round. And I think a lot of people will look at it like that, Israel made him tired in the later rounds, but if they were to look at it in detail, I think Jan made himself tired in that fourth round going into the fifth, but he were able
just
to do
the turning up the gas kind of thing, like making sure he scored points on the judges' card.
Well, that's it, him turning up the tempo, because again, like I said, Israel Adesanya is a point fighter, he's a kickboxer, he's a stand-up fighter, he's a counterpuncher, but he's got power. A lot of people say that he hasn't got power. You don't generally always need power. He's one of the world-class strikers, the best striker in the UFC for me. If you've got good technique and precision can knock people out alone. You don't always need power. He rocked Jan. He hurt Jan a couple of times in that fight. Jan hurt him also. But Jan were able to pull off them takedowns in the fourth and fifth and do exactly the same what Dominic Cruz did in the fight. When he knew it were a close fight in that last round, he took him down and he controlled the fight. And that's what got him that fight. And in this case, it's the exact same. Jan were able to take him down in the fourth and fifth, able to use that position and win the fight. And congratulations to him. Israel Adesanya goes back down. To be honest with you, I think he goes back down and he fights Darren Till and tries to get a bit of confidence back after that loss. the reason I think Till is because he's already mentioned his name. Now, you don't mention someone's name who's not supposedly up there for a title shot if you don't know truly that you're going to fight him anyway. So I do believe he's going to end up fighting him. And Jan's going to fight either other one in lightweight.
Rakic.
No. That other guy. Glover.
Yeah, definitely should be definitely should be
lost for a second.
But I think Adesanya's future is definitely in the lightweight division. I think he needs to take a little bit of time to put on some body mass to meet that that limit, to be cutting to get to 205 rather than to be, like I said, eating pizza and showing up to the weigh-ins holding a 12-inch whilst still weighing less than 200 pounds. But I think he's near enough cleared out the middleweight division. He's left a legacy that few can live up to. And I think going up to lightweight and perhaps dominating that, I mean, he's gone up against the champion of that division and looked like he belongs. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, he were going toe-to-toe with Jan, and that's what really good things. A lot of people were saying, if he goes toe-to-toe, he's going to get knocked out. Jan hit him with a couple of good shots, and he didn't get knocked out. And that surprised me, because I thought at least Jan would have hurt him more times than he did, and he didn't. And Jan was actually reacting to every single feint that Israel Adesanya was throwing. Every single feint was getting a reaction out of Jan. And that's the good thing about Israel. He's technical, and the way he strikes and the way he moves is sort of off-putting to fighting, because you're confused. It's one of them fights where you're looking at him rather than fighting him.
Yeah.
And that's the mistake a lot of the fighters make. They look at him and they give him room to fight. Jan started having more success when he put him up against the cage and he put him on his back. You cannot leave Adesanya room to work. Mm-hmm. You give him room to work, he's going to win the fight 9 times out of 10.
Yeah, absolutely. So after that, we get a little bit of a calm down with UFC Fight Night. Leon Edwards taking on last-minute replacement Bilal Muhammad. Yeah, there's a few interesting fights on this card. Angela Hill finally gets to break the strawweight division fights record with the match against Ashley Yoder, which has been put off time and again. Dan Agger faces Gavin Tucker. Ben Rothwell is back, taking on Philip Lins. Co-main event of Misha Cirkunov taking on Ryan Spann. So that'll be an interesting kind of palate cleanser card before we get into the run-up to UFC 260, which is going to be an absolute banger with that heavyweight title match, and then the featherweight co-main event of Volkanovski taking on Ortega. So, yeah, definitely watch and listen along for that. But firstly, we appreciate everybody who came into the chat to our debut live stream. I'll be doing this all the time now, going on with 5 rounds. We really appreciate the support from Anthony, our head honcho at Smart to Death, and Shooting the Sports Ish, who really kind of walked me through doing this setup. I really do appreciate that. So definitely go and follow on all social medias, Shooting the Sports Ish. Go and follow on Visionaries Global Media, and also on The Chair Shot. I am Mags. Follow me on Twitter at DJ Kirby. Follow Carlos here at Kirby_Carlos. Follow 5 Rounds Pod on all the social medias out there. Thank you all for watching and listening. And that is the end.
Adios, amigos.